Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Madeva Garba. Deva Garba took sannyas in 1980 and holds a master's degree in psychology from Antioch University. Her background includes training in both traditional and alternative forms of counseling and hypnosis, including certification as a Rajneesh counselor in 1983. Deva Garba is a certified clinical hypnotherapist and certified professional hypnotherapy trainer, and has taught state and nationally approved professional certification trainings in hypnotherapy for over 25 years. Deva Garba, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Swaram.
Excellent. Okay, so to start our chat today, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, like I think with a lot of sannyasins, it started with a book. I was traveling in California and a friend of mine gave me a book called Only One Sky, which is now published as Tantra, the Supreme Understanding. But in those days, it was Only One Sky. And I read this book and I felt like it was the first time in my life that here was someone who understood me. I was searching. I was pretty troubled. And I read this book and it just changed everything. And I knew I had to go to India to meet him. So in 1980, I went to Pune and I received sannyas from him. And that was it.
Yes, I can imagine that. But I'd love to go a little bit in the details of, if you can tell me, what was about Osho that really pulled something inside, that struck the core, that made you change your life completely?
Oh my gosh. Well, my mind, I think, again, it's for so many of us, you know, my mind was nonstop chatter, and I had wanted to do anything possible just to turn it off. And when I read Only One Sky, there was a portion in there where he says, you know, who are you to stop the mind? The mind is like the waves on the ocean. You just watch, you just be a witness. And it was, gave me such freedom to know that, you know, I can stop battling with myself. I can just start to watch and witness and just let it be. And so that was a huge turning point for me. And when I went to Pune, you know, my mind still was very, you know, I'd go into Buddha Hall for a sitting meditation and I literally felt like I had to run out of the hall because just to sit and be quiet was such an impossibility for me. I was 22 at the time. It was just impossible. And then there was the miracle that happened when I took sannyas, when I sat in front of him and I looked up at him and it was like the veil had lifted. And I saw sitting in front of me this man who was perfectly ordinary and also absolutely enlightened and kind of confronted with that paradox. I started laughing. I thought, this is really funny. You know, there are these people who, you know, there's thousands of people sitting in an auditorium. He's sitting on the dais. People worship this man. And yet he said he's always said that he's just ordinary. And here I was actually seeing that. It was like my vision was, for the first time in my life, really clear. And so he smiled and his eyes were twinkling. And of course, and he just started talking to me and he gave me my new name and he told me what it meant. And then he said to me, I mean, he talked to me for what seemed like a very long time. And at one point he said to me, he said, you know, my job here is to wake people up. And when people are asleep, it's almost impossible to wake them up. But then he looked right at me and he said, but when someone's already awake, it's almost impossible to wake them up. And I just went, whoa, oh my God. And somewhere inside of me, there was this voice that said, the jig is up, you know, he knows. But then there was this other voice saying, no, you know, he was saying to me, he said, you know, you're lying in the bed and you're wide awake, but you don't want to get up. You're pulling the covers over your head. You're tossing and turning, but I'll keep throwing water in your eyes. And there was this little voice that said, no, no, you can't make me. It was the strangest thing. And if I'd really had the presence of mind, I would have asked him in that moment, what is that? What is that? But, you know, of course I didn't. And then it was over. And I walked around the ashram in an absolute state of bliss for probably the next 2 or 3 days. But then, of course, you know, it faded and I went back to my normal neurotic self, and because, you know, there was a lot of work to do. But it was a glimpse, you know, and so many sannyasins, they talk about having these satoris where you have this glimpse of what's possible. And once I knew, you know, what was possible, it just smoothed the way along the path. Not that there wasn't, I mean, there was, you know, so much very difficult work and to do with this personality and all this stuff. But my gosh, once you have a glimpse and you know what's possible, it changes things. It really changes your life. And I know thousands of sannyasins would say the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's very, very beautifully put, articulated, and it really gave me feeling. And it actually resonates. You know, of course, I haven't met Osho in the body physically, but when I came across Osho and I got interested in meditation, my mind was absolutely out of the roof. You know, I couldn't sit still for 1 second. You know, it's just so neurotic. Now that I'm a little bit better now, maybe I'm aging. But I think the idea of meeting an awakened person in front of you physically, that gives you that moment of bliss of no mind, and then you know that what he's talking about is real. It's not just something that mystics have talked about and you read in book, but it's a real dimension, a real experience. And then, I don't know, it makes you even more thirsty.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard you ask other people that you've talked to about, or just questioning, you know, how different really is it, or was it, to have actually met Osho in the body versus after he left the body? And I don't think there's any difference at all. I think I didn't understand this for a while, but I really do now. And part of that is I went to visit, Peter and I went to visit Osho Nirvana, and we met the people there. And I talked to Chetna, and she talked about being in Nepal and having this experience, I think in one of Swami Arun's meditation camps. And it was exactly the same when she was talking about the experience. It was just the same as what I felt. And actually what I felt with some other teachers as well, not teachers who were necessarily even enlightened, but I really think it's about receptivity. You know, I've had these transcendent experiences reading Osho's books, you know, watching his videos. And I really, do believe that energy is available. It has to do with your openness to it. And when a person is open, then this comes rushing in. And so he is absolutely available, body or no. And I think probably you've talked to a number of people that have not met him in the body that would share that view. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's also mm-hmm. my experience, my reality, my life. You know, I haven't met Osho physically, but I think I mm-hmm. got that glimpse, that energy connection that makes me really wanted to meditate and go deeper and deeper and trust that mm-hmm. what Osho is pointing at is true. Because ultimately, I don't know, but I have a trust, I have a feeling inside that that's the right mm-hmm. path. And yeah, I just trust Osho. It's not believe, it's about experiencing it, but it's trying to make that a reality in my daily life through meditation. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been an amazing start. So let's move on to the main topic of today's talk. I know you have been researching past life regressions through hypnosis as a topic for a book that you are writing. And it's a really fascinating topic, a little bit difficult to talk about, especially in our age and days where science is the new god, if you like. You know, if something is not proven scientifically, it's basically completely neglected. It doesn't exist. I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of, I haven't done my own research, but there are people who have collected testimonies about past life regressions and reincarnations, but it's not been scientifically proven. Let's start from the beginning. How did you get involved in it? How did you get interested in this topic?
Well, after the ranch folded, there were, you know, all of a sudden here, these thousands of people kind of launched out into the world like seeds from a dandelion flower. And many of us were trying to, you know, think, oh, what do we do now? What's our next step? And I had been trained, I'm a psychotherapist, I have a master's degree in psychology, but I didn't find traditional counseling very rewarding. Although I had taken the Rajneesh counselor training at the ranch, that was how I first landed at the ranch, was that 3-month training. But I still didn't feel like I had my way forward. And so at that time, I heard from another sannyasin that she had taken a training in something called alchemical hypnotherapy in California from the ancient practice of alchemy. That's where the word alchemical comes from. And many, many sannyasins, particularly those who had been at the ranch, had signed up for this training. Now, the teacher was not a sannyasin, but apparently the techniques were really profound. So I said, well, you know, maybe hypnotherapy would be something to pursue. So kind of sight unseen, I signed up for the training and went to do it. And as part of that training, there was a 3-day course on past life regression. Now, I had no frame of reference for past life regression. I had never explored the idea of reincarnation. When I was with Osho, I never heard him talk about it. Even now, the information that I've discovered is, I think, mainly from talks and answers to disciples' questions back in the 70s. So he really, you know, it wasn't in the forefront of what he was talking about. But, you know, it's the same. It's about trust. It's about being open to things. So here's this course in past life regression. And I thought, well, you know, we'll just see, you know, just have a look. and so one of the topics that was covered, there are different reasons for doing past life regression. And one of them is if someone has a phobia that they don't really see a cause for in this lifetime. And so I thought, well, do I have a phobia? And I thought, well, yeah, one thing that really terrifies me is the idea of going into the ocean. We go on family vacations to Florida, and I couldn't get past my ankles. It was just, you know, there's this idea that there's something down there that I don't know that could be scary. And I had no reason to feel that way. I never spent time at the ocean when I was growing up. I never heard stories about it. But when I went to see the movie Jaws, I literally, at that first scene where there's this woman who's being, you know, pulled down by this shark, I literally went running, screaming out of the theater, out into the lobby. I mean, it was a packed theater. I was down like in the first row because we had gotten there late. So there's this thing, you know, so close. I went running out into the lobby and I demanded my money back. You know, these people are just trying to scare me, you know. And the poor manager, you know, sure, lady, you know, here's your money back. So, you know, obviously that was a very scary scene, but my reaction, I think, was really over the top. So I thought, okay, I'll take a look. And in fact, when I, lay down to be the client in the class, and my student therapist guided me into trance, when I got to, which involved in that case, walking down a set of stairs into the subconscious mind, I went through a door and bam, I was in the ocean. And not 6 feet from my face was this shark just coming toward me. And I felt terror in my body like I have never felt in my life, to the point where afterwards other people in the room said that I went white as a sheet and my body became completely rigid. And when my therapist said, "What's happening?" I couldn't answer. I literally couldn't respond. So during this, this small group, there's always a supervisor, an assistant in the room who's had more experience. And she said, turn the clock back to the time before this scary scene. And I found myself, boom, in the hold of a ship going to the new world. And I saw with me was my husband in my current life. And I could tell because when I looked in his eyes were immediately familiar to me. And with the tossing and turning of the ship, a cask had become loosened and had pinned him. And so he was being crushed. He was going to die. And so I said, "I've got to go get the captain. I've got to, tell the captain." But we were stowaways on the ship. We weren't supposed to be there. And he said, no, don't do that. And I didn't listen. And I threw myself on the mercy of the captain of the ship. And he extricated my husband and then promptly threw us both overboard. And that's how we came to be in the water. So there was more to the process. Then it was, the therapist said, "Okay, now move the..." Because at that point, when we got onto the hold of the ship, I was then able to communicate. I was then able to speak. So I could tell my therapist what was happening. And so then she said, "Well, move the clock forward past the moment of your death." And I saw myself and Peter in the afterlife, kind of heading toward the light. And I said, I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose you. And he said, "It's okay. We'll see each other again soon." He said, I've always been ready for death, and we'll see each other again soon. So there was a bit more to the process than that, but it was the feeling was so real. It felt so. I can't imagine something in my imagination that would have created that visceral, physical response. So it was extraordinary. And then, of course, the point of doing this work, from my point of view, is therapeutic. The point of doing any kind of therapy is to get free. We're held back by all these trips, right? So the point is to get free. So after completing the rest of the process, and it actually required a follow-up session, I was no longer afraid of the ocean, Swaram. I could go in. I could swim in the ocean. I even took scuba diving training, and I found myself looking for, nurse sharks on the bottom of the reef. It was just incredible. So number one, it was just profound in and of itself. But number two, the way that it helped me to actually overcome this unrealistic fear of being in the ocean was really something for me. And so over the years since, I've continued to, at different times, address issues that, again, didn't seem to have their origin in this lifetime. And the way in which those processes has moved my life forward and freed me from guilt and suffering has been very compelling. So this book that I'm writing really started with me just wanting to write down this series of experiences that I've had, over decades, because they started to illustrate a pattern. There was a pattern happening, and that they all kind of fit together like the pieces in a puzzle. So I thought, wow, I know people have written books about, you know, past life regression, and therapists have written it about their clients. But, you know, this is my personal story. I've never really read an account where one individual has progressed through, I guess at this point, there may be 6 to 8 past life experiences that are covered in the book. And the way that they all fit together and have worked to help free my consciousness from past, all kinds of past garbage, for lack of a better word, yeah.
Okay, well, amazing. So essentially, just to summarize and recap a bit, you were a psychotherapist by profession, you got interested in hypnotherapy, and then through that hypnotherapy course, covered about past life regressions course, 3-day course, which essentially changed your life completely, because during that course, you managed to resolve an issue of phobia of sharks, which is very common, by the way. I know a guy who trains people to handle stress, showing a video of that movie with a shark, because most people, I mean, I don't have a phobia of sharks, but I'm definitely scared of sharks.
Well, they're dangerous creatures. They're dangerous creatures. But you know, the crowning part of that story came years later. It turned out that the shark, in alchemical hypnotherapy, we work with inner guides. So these are the aspects of the wise self that's within each one of us. So rather than the therapist coming up with all the answers and the solutions, we're directed to look inside ourselves and find our own, what my teacher called inner guides. So at the end of this process, this shark set it becomes a guide for me. I mean, basically in a follow-up session, he says, listen, you know, don't take it personally. This shark is talking to me. He says, you're in my ocean. And this is what I do. I clear the ocean of debris and of all kinds. And so, you know, it wasn't personal. And as a matter of fact, this is kind of funny. I mean, the subconscious is not without humor. He said, as a matter of fact, you should be grateful to me, because your death was relatively quick. Otherwise, you would have had this long, slow drowning death. It would have been terrible. So then he agrees to be a guide for me in my inner world. Okay, so fast forward, you know, 10 years, 15 years. And I'm at a conference in Washington State, and we're doing different kinds of meditations. And at that time, the results of climate change, the impact of climate change, was really starting to hit the news. And I was extremely, I took it very personally, very to heart. I was extremely despondent over the state of the planet and people and how we could be letting this happen. And so I'm actually in a pretty severe depression. And that evening, one evening, I think it was the second evening of the conference, I go back to my hotel room, and Peter and I watch a movie called Blackfish, a documentary. Have you seen Blackfish?
No.
It's a documentary about an orca whale named Tilikum that's was in captivity at SeaWorld for many years and ended up killing 3 people. This orca whale ended up killing 3 people, including 2 of its trainers. And so this movie is interviews and video clips of this whale and his interactions with his trainers. And it's quite terrifying. And another example of how human beings are so crazy, you know, to put these beautiful animals in captivity, it's terrible. And this particular animal literally was driven crazy by his captivity and ended up acting in the way he did. So the next morning, I go down for the final day of the conference, and we're starting a meditation. And I don't know what the topic was. I don't know where she led me, but when I close my eyes, my own process just starts. And I close my eyes, and I see my body suspended limply above the ocean, just hanging in the air above the ocean. And from beneath the ocean, I see this black fish, this orca whale, coming up through the water. And I know it's going to breach, and it's going to grab me, and it's going to consume me. And in my understanding, because I work a lot with, you know, subconscious dream symbolism, you know, that whale represented, coming out of the emotional watery depths, my depression. And it's going to consume me. I don't have any distance on it at all. So just as this black fish breaches the surface of the water and it's about to grab my legs, from out of left field comes this great white shark, my guide, that I hadn't been in touch with for over a decade. It leaps out of the water, it breaches the water and goes boom, and pushes the black fish out of the way and saves my life. And at the same time, I hear this voice from my cub's subconscious saying, "Don't let your light go out with theirs. Don't let your light go out with theirs," meaning don't let your light go out with these people who died from this mad orca whale. And when I came out of the process, my depression was gone. It was just gone. And I felt this resolve, you know, don't get dragged down by what's happening out there with others, you know. And I felt like I just need to do what I can to help people through whatever dark times are ahead. I can't afford to let myself be taken under by all the negativity and all the hardship around. So I have to stay clear. I have to do what I can. And it was just like that, just shift immediate. So that was kind of like the most recent piece. This was probably about 10 years ago now.
I see.
That started with a phobia. It was the way the subconscious mind is absolutely remarkable to me. The answers that we seek are really there inside of ourselves, just like Osho always said.
I think for me, the big question is, I mean, first of all, let me say that whatever works is wonderful. You know, if you have been helped through these techniques, and if I'm sure many other people have been helped, we don't need to understand and wait for science to explain something that is already working. But just for the sake of talking, I think for me, the big question has always been, whenever I thought about past life regressions, is how do you know it's a real experience of a past life event versus imagination and fantasy and the subconscious, collective unconscious? Again, if it works, it doesn't matter. But what's your take on that?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think we can really know. I don't think we can really know. And I think, you know, when I would teach trainings, because I became a teacher myself, I had a school myself where I taught hypnotherapy certification trainings. And when I would teach the section on past life regression, I would say, you know, it could be. I mean, my teacher taught it as, you know, here's this soul, and it goes through, there's a linear progression that you go from body to body, from lifetime to lifetime. So that's one possible explanation. But there are others. And one is certainly that it could be imagination. Absolutely. One is that it could be that we are tapping into the collective unconscious and we are bringing forth experiences that other people have gone through that can help us to resolve things in our life. And I actually, from my reading, suspect that that's what Osho would say. You know, that rather than there being a personal soul that is reincarnated from one life to another, there is kind of a thread, a continuous thread of consciousness. And it, you know, that thread of consciousness is reborn over and over, you know, lifetime to life, in different bodies, in different human form. And that we, you know, we can tap into those layers of consciousness that preceded us. So that's absolutely a possibility. You know, it could be a metaphor for something else. So yeah, there are many explanations. And I don't know scientifically if it's possible to really confirm. I have read books, and actually even Osho himself has said that reincarnation is absolutely real. He describes in one of his talks doing hypnosis himself with a young girl who was confused, thinking that she was in one family, but her real family lived in a neighboring town 2 hours away. And he actually, what the transcript of his lecture says is that it took 7 sessions where he actually had to help her to forget her past life so that she could be happy in this lifetime. Yes. But this, you know, the sign, and in India, there's actually a book called 28 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation. And it's a couple PhD type professors that went to India, and they interviewed families where children had claimed to have been somewhere else in the country, and they were able to give the details about that previous lifetime and so forth. So there have been efforts to confirm with research that reincarnation is real. But of course, you know, in the West, where you die and go to heaven, and this is the only life there is, it's going to be a hard sell. Even in the scientific community, there are people who have those Western religious beliefs about heaven and hell and so forth. So that may be part of it. You know, but ultimately, like you're saying, it really doesn't matter. And for me as a therapist, and for me myself, it's about me getting clear to the extent that I can. And if it works, you know, that's really the bottom line of what's important. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, if it works, it works. And we don't need to wait for the scientists to explain to us what's going on there, if they will ever be able to do that. So,
well, it's like, isn't it kind of like, I mean, it's like asking a scientist to prove that you're in love. Prove it, you know, how do you prove it? Or can you prove to a scientist that Osho is enlightened? How do you prove it? What do? Measure brainwaves? I don't know, but science is an absolutely marvelous tool, and it has its limits. And the place where it's limited is, I think, when it comes to the realm of mystical experience or magical experiences that each of us has had in our lives. There's not necessarily going to be a scientific explanation for it. So we have to accept, I think, that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, they're called mystical exactly because they cannot be explained logical mind and scientific measurements. So, yeah.
I've tried. It doesn't work.
But they are real experiences. Many people have these experiences in their life. So it's a reality that we know exists. We experience it. It's just that we can't fully explain it.
Yes.
So, part of the process of writing the book is being, of course, doing research specifically about what Osho said about reincarnation and past life. So you mentioned already that Osho, I remember reading that incident exactly as you described, that Osho did the hypnotherapy sessions with this child who would remember the previous family, et cetera, et cetera. In many other occasions, you know, I don't have the exact references now, but I know for a fact, I remember hearing, unless I'm hallucinating, that Osho mentioned many times about past lives and the reincarnation. He never encouraged people to get into the details, you know, he never encouraged, you know, astral traveling, extra sensory experiences. It's not that he dwelled too much into past lives, but he said on various occasions that it's a reality. What's your view on why Osho, on the one hand, clearly states that this is a fact, but on the other hand, does not encourage people to dig too much into it?
Well, I think the reason he doesn't encourage people to dig too much into it is because it can be a huge distraction in itself from meditation. You know, you can get so wrapped up in all this esoteric stuff, which is often just a head trip. You know, it's just something that's just mind candy, something we want to think about. And, you know, obviously that's not where he was coming from. And everything that I've read about his talks on reincarnation were always answers to disciples' questions. So I don't know of a time when he actually came and did a talk specifically on reincarnation. But obviously, especially in the earliest days, when someone would ask, he would answer. So, you know, that's one piece. And I don't believe that you need to believe or understand about reincarnation. But as I said, if it is helpful as a tool to help clear things that might otherwise, present problems in going deeper into your meditation, like any therapy, it's a bridge. It's a bridge to meditation. Therapy is a bridge to meditation. And this is another example of that. So in my case, and in the case of people that I would work with, I didn't explore past lives out of some kind of curiosity. I think Osho would discourage people from looking at it from, you know, just because you're curious. It was because there was something that needed to somebody needs to take a look at. And that's just where it went. Sometimes even spontaneously, it wasn't even the intention to go into a past life, but it would arise spontaneously from the subconscious. And then, you know, you just trust the subconscious and go with the content that it presents. Without bothering, is it real? Is it not real? It doesn't matter. It's important because it was presented from the subconscious. In terms of what he has said that really resonates with me, one of the things that I struggled with is, how is it that he could say that there really, you know, that there's no ego, there's no self, this is just a trip? And yet at the same time, talk about the soul moving from one lifetime to the next. That would seem to indicate that there is an individual soul. And then, of course, the first question that I read in this book that's exactly the question that the disciple was asking, you know, how do you reconcile the fact that there's no personal self with the fact that a soul travels from one lifetime to another? My understanding of this, and of course, I would encourage everyone to read him on their own, because I can, you know, my attempt to paraphrase, but in my understanding, the notion that there is an individual soul that moves from one body to the next is actually not the highest way of understanding reincarnation. That's Buddhist, Hindu, you know, Sikh, they all believe in that method of reincarnation. That's the method that my teacher in hypnotherapy, that's the theory that he expounded. But what Osho says is that it's more like, as I mentioned before, like there's a thread of consciousness, which is kind of like an electrical current that carries on even after the death of a body. You know, he talks about the subtle body. He calls it the subtle body. We've also heard it called the astral body. The subtle body is the part of us that holds our thoughts, our feelings, our experiences, our emotions. These are all in the subtle body. And when the physical body dies, that subtle body is what continues. And this is what the Buddha taught as well, that it's actually energy that carries on, because energy is never lost. That's energy that carries on. And that is what finds incarnation in a physical body. When someone becomes enlightened and they reach a state of meditation and that profound silence in which there is no self, then that stream basically stops. There's nothing left that needs to be reborn into another body. Which I was talking to my daughter the other day, and I said, this is terrible. That means that all the enlightened people, you know, they're not getting reborn. These are the ones that we need. The only people being reborn are the ones who haven't passed the course yet. You know, we're all a bunch of failures. That's why we're here. No wonder the world is in such a mess. But from a, you know, a esoteric point of view, this is my understanding of what Osho says happens, is that there's not actually this individual soul. And I also feel and wonder if one reason why he didn't talk about that much is because, truly, as much as all of us want to become enlightened and drop the self, the prospect of entering into a state of nothingness is very scary, I believe, to most people. It's fine to talk about it, but the idea of actually disappearing into this state of oneness where there is not anymore this personality is not something maybe that many people are really ready for, not really ready to let go into that state. So I think he didn't want to scare us that there really is nothing after death. You know, it's not. There's a thought stream that maybe will be reborn somewhere. But we, as we know ourselves, are a temporary phenomenon. We're just part of a continuum of life that goes on and on. I think that there, you know, our ego is threatened by that, the fact that there really is no individual self. Yeah, very threatening and scary for most people, I would say.
Indeed, indeed, absolutely, yes. When I meditate, and sometimes I had that moments where I feel I'm going deeper, I'm scared as well. I have a few times where this fear, you know, I'm not suggesting that I've got anywhere near close to, you know, the ultimate experience of anything, but even just going a little bit deeper than the normal state of the chattering mind, fear arises because there is this black hole. And I think you're absolutely right there, that enlightened people have a very tough job. On the one hand, they need to inspire us to, they come to inspire us to get enlightened. On the other hand, normally, you know, the ego doesn't really like that.
Yeah, we don't want to become enlightened. No. We don't really want to let go. Okay. Although, you know, I want to share that one of the things that has been just so important for me, and maybe just to encourage you with a little bit of another layer of trust. This experience of this universal consciousness has happened to me at three different times when I was with Osho. And the first two times I didn't understand what it was. It happened, and I think it always happens spontaneously. But the third time, it happened two times when I was in the counselor training course, that I all of a sudden, something in the course acted like a trigger, and I was gone. And I didn't know I was gone until I came back. And then I knew that I had been gone. But even then, in 1983, that would have been, I didn't understand. I didn't have a cognitive framework for what had happened to me. It was very confusing. But the last time I saw Osho is when we went to Pune in 1987, I think. And we were there, Peter and I were there for 4 months, and we attended a number of darshans with Osho in Lao Tzu Auditorium. And a few days before we left, we had our last darshan. And as I was sitting there, you know, Osho came in, he sat down, I closed my eyes. And all of a sudden, this idea came to me of how to slow down my mind. And so I began to imagine my thoughts. I began to slow down my thoughts and imagine them kind of like on a ticker tape going across a blackboard in front of me, these white words on a blackboard. And if I would miss a word, I'd slow it down so that I would really see each word in the sentence. And then finally, my thoughts were slow enough that I began to be able to see just one word at a time on this blackboard going across. So the thoughts are slowing down so I can see them this way. And then I look back to the source of the words, and there aren't any. And at that moment, I disappeared. And I disappeared. And it was a state of, like you're saying, like exactly, there's a black, there was nothing, consciousness, maybe some kind of vibration of energy, but no, nothing, not the witness, not anything. And some time later, I opened my eyes and I was back. And Osho was gone, and you know, everyone was leaving the auditorium. And at that moment, I realized that Osho had given me a taste of the ultimate reality that he has spoken of. And it alleviated my fear. It alleviated my fear about death and everything. I mean, I'm still get afraid. The personality is going to do what the personality does. But on some kind of very deep level, that fear was gone. That, okay, yeah, there's no me, and it really doesn't matter. You know, I'm not important. I'm not significant. I'm a cell on a body of the whole. You know, there's no self-importance. I wish I could explain why that happened. I wish there were more sannyasins that would come forward and say, yes, that happened to me too. Because I feel like it almost does a disservice to Osho for people not to acknowledge that they have that deep experience of the beyond, it's what his work was about. And I know absolutely that this was not a random experience, that many people have known that ultimate state through his grace, like the candle flame jumping. Yes. But this, you know, and still, even after that, I mean, that was back in 1987. So fast forward, I've still been very deeply involved in doing my own work, my own healing through past life regression, through other things. But that was like this, like a whole nother level of the Satori experience that we started about earlier, that you have this, now you have this knowing, you know, this inner knowing. Can I prove it? Can I, you know, no, but I don't have to. It is what it is. And as I said, I think, and I wouldn't even consider myself a particularly trusting sannyasin. I don't think I was particularly good devotee. I mean, really, not at all. I'm not one of those people who would have these, you know, fall into a state of reverie at his feet. But he is who he is. And just to be open and just to be in his presence in whatever form it comes to you is the most amazing gift.
Thanks for sharing this beautiful experience. And I'm sure many, many more sannyasins, you know, in personal conversation, I heard this happen to many others. So perhaps they don't want to come forward and because they think that they're showing off. But the way you did it is beautiful. It's just sincere. It's your experience. And then people can, you know, take away whatever they want. So when is your book coming up? When are you going to?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. It's not, it's in the process of editing now. Honestly, part of me, I'm not even sure I want to publish it because it's so deeply personal and not all of it is flattering. You know, some of the lifetimes that I've had, I was not a very nice person. And so, anyway, I probably at some point. So if I do end up actually publishing a book, I'll probably, you know, it'll probably be available through Viha, like so many other sannyasin stories are available through Viha Connection. And Danyama Navi Nasho will put it out there when and if that time arises. So, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. And I look forward to reading it for sure. And then I will add the link to this episode of the show when the book is out. If you're editing, it's ready. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to come out very soon. Just go for it because, you know, it's a wonderful story and it can help many others. So
thank you, Swaram.
I encourage you to go for it. I have three final questions. So the first one is, what's the book that has the most impact in your life?
Well, you know, Tantra, the supreme understanding, you know, only one sky is really what started me on the path to Osho. So I would have to say that that book for me is the one that has the most powerful effect. Yeah.
Okay. So the second question is, what would be your advice to someone who has just started their path with Osho?
Well, I would say that you're lucky because you're coming, after so many others. Somebody once said, you know, I can see as far as I do because I'm standing on the shoulders of those who have come before me. And it reminds me of once I heard an interview with Tirtha, and someone was asking him, you know, in early Pune, there was all this drama and violence even in these encounter groups. And, you know, how could such a thing have occurred? And he said, he was so beautiful. He said, well, I wouldn't do that now. And it didn't happen. It happened for a while. And then it was almost like it was done for the collective, not just for the people that were in the groups, but for the collective, it was done. And it's almost like we're all still part of this collective. And for the people just coming into the sannyasin collective now, they didn't need that. You know, they didn't need that intensive therapy necessarily. They don't need to necessarily be in Osho's physical presence. We've moved on as a collective. And so it's like starting, you know, like in a 10-mile start, you know, there's a train going 10 miles and you get on, you know, at mile 8, you know, you didn't have to experience the first 8 miles, you know, you're still going to get to 10. You just got to jump over that first part for whatever reason. And so I think that people just coming to Osho now are in a very, very fortunate place, especially with the work that you're doing of taking interviews from people, you know, that they get to kind of get this historical perspective of what went before. And yet it really is always about being in the now. And Osho is always available in the now. And I feel like people who are coming now are ready to experience that reality. They don't need all the other shenanigans.
Now, I really like this image of standing on the shoulders of the people who have come before. And so if we apply this to the world of Osho and all the sannyasins and all the beautiful people that have come before us, I love it. It's a great image and it somehow can symbolize what we're doing with this podcast. We are almost taking a pictures of the giants who have come and just to, you know, even just bow down and thank for everything that you have done and still doing.
Thank you.
So the last question is, you have been with Osho when Osho was in the body. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
Well, you know, I haven't lived in the commune for a long time, really after the ranch. I have to say I was kind of allergic to the whole idea of being in the commune. You know, there's no privacy, people telling you where to go, what to do. I mean, even when we went to Punitu, there was still this sense of us and them. They're the people who were in charge. And then, I mean, you know, Peter and I were given a warm welcome because, you know, we had been around the block, especially Peter, you know, oh, come on, Peter, we have a car for you to fix. We dented Osho's Rolls Royce. I mean, right away, you know, they want to bring him in. But still, I've really kind of kept my distance really from the Sangha, to be honest. And then I got this strong feeling to last year, thankfully before COVID hit, to visit Osho Nirvana. I really just wanted to go. And there was a group there over Valentine's Day. I think it was about, you know, something about relationship. And I said, oh, this sounds like a nice thing to do for Valentine's Day. So we'll go. And we went. And I will tell you that the experience for me was so overwhelming, you know, to sit in that meditation hall. There weren't that many of us, you know, there were just maybe a dozen of us in that group. But to hear his voice over the, you know, booming into this room and to be with other sannyasins was just, I mean, I was moved to tears. It was absolutely incredible. And it made me feel like, you know, I got to get back to the Sangha. I gotta get there again. It was like a reconnection for me with this broader experience of Osho's energy, not just in here or, you know, in my with my beloved, but bigger, you know, bigger than us. And it was so profound. So I'm hoping to be able to repeat that experience once this COVID is over, either, I don't know if in San Diego or somewhere else, but you know, it's strange because I don't feel like my connection with Osho is personal. Like I said, I never felt like I was a very devoted sannyasin. I never felt like I was particularly surrendered, none of that. But there he is, and here I am, and this, you know, shift in consciousness, any shift in consciousness, I have to trace back to his presence. Then, now, I don't know. I can't explain it.
Okay, so let's leave it there, unexplained, but beautifully felt and transmitted. Devagarbha, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, real enjoy, really made me think a lot. I'm very curious about this topic of reincarnation, so it was very fascinating for me to hear from you, your research and your views and your understanding. So thank you so much for sharing your experience and yeah, lots of love.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sora.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.